agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for March 20th, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. In agricultural news, the commissioner of the CFTC says there needs to be greater oversight of high-frequency traders. We'll have that and other stories. Todd Gleason reports on the value of cover crops, and meteorologist Drew Lerner will give us the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Here are last trades on this Wednesday afternoon in Kansas City May wheat. 764 and a quarter up 12 and a half. July, 769 up 12 and a quarter. May wheat in Chicago, 737 up 15. July, 734 and a half up 13 and three quarters. May corn, 732 up 3 and a half. July, 717 and a half up 5 and a half. December, 566 and three quarters up 4 and a half. May soybeans, 1417 up 10 and a quarter. July, 1397 up 9. November, 1259 up 3 and a half. May soybean meal, 413 up 140. July, 409 up 330. May soybean oil, this is a settlement here, 4984 up 36. July soybean oil settled at 5010 up 38. Back to last trades, April live cattle, 126.27 and a half, up 97 and a half. June feeders, 122.12 and a half. Excuse me, March feeders, 135.50, down 50, and April lean hogs, 77.90, down 32 and one half. And those are your last trades and settlements for this Wednesday afternoon in Chicago and Kansas City.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says the next significant winter-like storm in the central U.S. will evolve late Friday into the weekend, producing generalized rain and snowfall from the central plains into the upper Midwest. The storm will be preceded by a smaller disturbance in the next couple of days. Overall, there will be a net boost in soil moisture in some hard red winter wheat areas and across the Midwest. Some of the moisture will be welcome in the plains and western Corn Belt, and some of it in the central and eastern Midwest might not be so welcome. Cold weather will continue to prevail across the northern and central U.S. plains and most of the Midwest. The lack of warm weather and continued frequent weather disturbances will leave the lower U.S. Midwest quite wet. A typical rainfall pattern will impact the Delta and southeastern states over the next week to 10 days, resulting in some delay to field work.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson Group in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Wheat put in quite a performance today.
Wheat. You know, you're very right about that. It turned itself around by its little bootstraps and pulled itself back up, and actually May wheat closed higher than May corn today. I think that some of that is coming off of the expectations for export sales for tomorrow. We are very, very competitive in the world market. And not knowing exactly what's going to happen when you look at wheat coming out of dormancy out in the west, you know, we've had this up-down hot or warm-cold pattern going on, and if you see some more moisture come into the plains, this is the dangerous time of year for wheat.
Meanwhile, the clock is ticking in the south, especially the deep south, regarding plantings for corn. I understand you had a chat with John Bondrot on this?
I did. I called John yesterday afternoon just to find out, you know, how they're doing. And he said, well, in his particular case, he said they started planting last week about 30 miles south of Memphis in Arkansas. And, you know, it's been cool, and it continues to be cool and wet. He said they have a place about 120 miles south of Memphis down in Mississippi that they started planting last Friday, got in 20 acres, started to rain Monday, and he said they've got 1,100 acres to do down there, basically. And they didn't. He thought they might be able to get back in today. He wasn't sure. He said, I asked him what the soil temperature was. He said it had been 58 degrees, but it's been very cool. So he didn't doubt that it probably fell some. He said northern Louisiana on a good pace. In fact, when you look at Louisiana corn crop, they've got 56% in versus an average of 21 normally. But he said the when you start to go south, it's still cool and wet. And they got a 10-day forecast now that shows some dry but extremely cold temperatures. And I asked him, I said, okay, so what's the ideal plant start date for corn when you look at the Delta? And he said about March 10th for the Central Delta and March 25th for the Northern Delta. So the Central Delta is already, you know, behind like you were talking about and just like this weather forecast is implying. And my big question to him was, okay, John, you were the guy who was telling us that we were going to get 4 million more corn acres out of the south. And are you still saying that? And he said, no. He said, we're going to start to see more cotton planted just because cotton price has appreciated more and because of the fact that we're behind. And so very interesting and certainly backs up what we're hearing. Not a pleasant place and really bad news for us because we need that early crop.
And meanwhile, over in the soybean pit, we saw some strength after some earlier weakness today. In fact, front-month soybeans pretty much closed close to on their high. And I guess it's a similar story that we've been hearing in recent days about Brazil and China?
Oh, no question about that. When you look at, you know, we saw some cancellations. 2 million metric tons canceled yesterday. We're now hearing that the backups at the port are about 100 days.
Wow.
And, yeah, that's huge, especially seeing that the penalties are like $6,600 a day for a ship that doesn't move. Excuse me. And when you look at, now we did hear the opposite side today. We did hear that perhaps some other crushers came in and bought some beans out of Brazil. But the reality is, when you look at us in the U.S., we have already sold 97% of what the USDA expects us to ship for the year. And we've already shipped 86% of that, so we've shipped 1.16 billion bushels of beans. And we have 24 weeks to go before we get to August 31st, and so you can see why we're starting to see some bullish thoughts going into this report at the end of next week, just with the idea that USDA is going to have to do something. My guess is that they may lower or increase exports, but then actually put some import numbers in there. Mm-hmm. You know, so it'll be hard to make a good guess as to how much we might lose. We could actually probably stay the same on ending stocks. They'll just make some adjustments there. But it's a whole different story when you look at the corn bed or the corn exports. Sale pace is good. We're on a pace for over a billion bushels to sell, but the inspections have just been crummy. And we're at 387.6 million. We're on a pace there to ship 720, and you know we're at 825. So I would have to think that we probably will see exports drop again. You know, when we look at the report coming out, that one won't come out until the beginning of next month. But I do believe that the whole thing will depend upon where grain stocks end up on this report next week, Thursday.
I would figure if we raise something over 3 billion bushels of soybeans, this issue in Brazil will hit November soybeans at some point.
I do believe you're right, and I think when you look at the Brazilian situation, too, the other thing that could have some impact on us is with the size of the crop that they have and the very poor infrastructure, the lack of a number of trucks, the law changes, they might still be delivering beans way out into October-November time frame, which is into our harvest time. And so it could bite us, but it could help us in the interim.
Let's turn our attention to international fares, where if you are a holder of securities in Cyprus, you're not getting your money out of the bank.
Well, that's right. The bank is they have the banks closed again tomorrow and Friday. They had such a run on. They said the ATM machines were not really, but literally smoking. Mm. People standing in line taking their cash, and you can't blame them because they plan on taking a portion of every single person's savings and removing that and taking it for the government. And so people were running to the banks to be able to take their stuff out. Now, yesterday, we saw a very negative reaction in our market to the Cyprus situation. Today, they're asking Russia for help, and now suddenly the market is more settled down and more happy. But this afternoon, I saw Russia come out with some comments from their chief economists who are saying they want to do what they call deshorization. In other words, bring our currency back home. Don't do any more offshore investments, mm-hmm. and because Russia's already heavily invested in Cyprus and in some of the other offshore situations. And so it'll be interesting to see how this whole thing rolls out. But I think yesterday was a good wake-up call for everybody just to show you that, it can still rear its ugly head and it can still have a very negative impact on the market, even though it's been quite quiet for a while.
About 45 seconds left. We do have a cattle on feed report due on Friday.
We do, and, the expectation, that's something that really helped short cattle up today and I think is giving the trade the impression we found a bottom. They're talking about on feed at 93.6% of last year, placements of only 91%, and marketings of 92.8%. So just a continuing pattern of less cattle being placed, and, of course, that's the way it is. But we're suffering. Price-wise, we're suffering a little bit because we don't have very many choice cattle. In fact, the choice select, which is what we watch for a ratio in a feedlot, usually runs about 10 to 1, 10 choice to every one select. Right now we are at negative 0.27.
Wow.
So we are green, green, green.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Dave. Bye-bye.
That's Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, and she is in Champaign, Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
In agricultural news, CFTC Commissioner Bart Chilton says that high-frequency traders need more oversight. Chilton says, quote, "We need to get a better handle on what's going on. We need to make sure that there are no perverse incentives to being involved in wash trades." Chilton says the CFTC should require all high-frequency traders to register so that they fall under the regulator's jurisdiction. Right now, CFTC could ask these companies for information about their trades, but they're under no obligation to respond. CFTC would have to get a subpoena to review a firm's books and records. Chilton also says that high-frequency trading firms need to be required to test their algorithms before letting them loose on the market, and that Congress needs to update CFTC penalty policies in the next reauthorization. Currently, CFTC can issue a $140,000 fine per violation, and case law has determined that one violation is one day, even if a firm makes thousands of trades a day. To high-frequency traders, that's just a cost of doing business. J.P. Morgan Chase has reached a $546 million settlement with MF Global Holdings to reimburse cash that was misplaced from customers' accounts when the trading firm collapsed in 2011. J.P. Morgan will pay $100 million to reimburse customers while relinquishing claims it had on $417 million in MF Global funds that it had previously returned to customer trustee James W. Glidden's. J.P. Morgan also is returning $29 million related to agreements, including an MF Global credit facility. The Senate is taking up its version of a continuing resolution that would prevent the Environmental Protection Agency from enforcing federal oil spill rules on farms. EPA's spill prevention regulations apply to owners and operators of facilities, including farms, if these facilities store, transfer, use, or consume oil, such as diesel fuel, gasoline, hydraulic oil, crop oil, vegetable oil, or animal fat. Senator Roy Blunt, a Republican from Missouri, has placed a hold on President Barack Obama's nomination of Gina McCarthy to head the EPA until the senator gets an update from the administration on its plans for a flood control project. The update was due on March 15th. But the administration failed to meet the deadline. At issue is a federal project which would close a 1,500-foot gap in the Mississippi River levee system. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Cover crops have become the new buzzword for agriculture. Todd Gleason has this assessment of their value in the Upper Midwest from the University of Illinois.
It seems at every turn, someone in the Midwest is talking about using cover crops. University of Illinois agronomist Emerson Nafziger has some concerns on this topic, but these are not related to weed control or soil conservation, two prime cover crop benefits. Ryegrass has and is being used after corn or soybeans as a cover crop. The problem is that it sticks around and can become an issue for those wanting to plant wheat. Having said that, Nafziger thinks rye is a pretty benign cover crop and says that it's easier to establish than some of the oilseed alternatives.
Oilseed radish or the daikon radishes, the tillage radishes and so on that are being planted now, they do a nice job if you can get them planted early enough and they get a good stand out there. The idea is with those that they'll open the soil up and then they do winter kill, which is always an advantage for cover crops. We don't have to work to kill them in the spring unless we get a really mild winter and they might carry over. But the real trick is getting those established.
It's not easy to establish a cover crop into a growing corn or soybean crop. However, it is fairly expensive, says Nafziger, even with the programs in place which make payments to cover part of the cost of flying on the seed.
There are people now that are dropping them from ground rigs and have modified sprayers or broadcast fertilizer applicators to put cover crop seed out there. But all in all, it appears that to be a reasonably risky process in terms of getting these established. And then depending on what happens with the weather in the fall, they might either make a lot of growth or might not make much growth at all.
Then, at least in the Upper Midwest, there is the problem of killing the cover crop before planting the row crop. This needs to be done about 3 to 4 weeks ahead of time.
Well, for us in Illinois, that means trying to destroy a cover crop in March so that we can get planted in April if the weather permits. And it's just very difficult with herbicides and pretty much impossible with tillage generally to destroy a cover crop 3 to 4 weeks before we'd like to be planting corn.
Oddly enough, it means the best cover crop might be one that does not establish well and winter kills. However, that means it would not provide the expected benefits. Nafziger puts it this way.
I guess one way I've put it is that the costs for cover crops are real and the benefits tend to be a little theoretical.
It is rare, says Nafziger, to find people that say there is clear proof cover crops increase profitability. The place of the cover crop on the farm, then, must be considered more long-term. Even there, the cover crop may come up short. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Scott Butcher of the Andersons in Clymers, Indiana. Good afternoon, Scott.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, on the big board, we hit 733 on May. Did that shake any corn loose today?
It did not. I mean, we really did not see a lot of activity today. A little bit of selling just because of the, flat price levels or where we're at. You know, guys have targets out there that they're trying to reach. But for the most part, I think, a lot of the selling is done here before planting.
Do you think that, first off, how much old crop is out there? And do you think, what are they looking for? Are they looking for $8?
Yeah, I definitely think that, most folks are looking for that $8 mark again, or something close to it anyway. You know, it seems like there is quite a bit of corn that is already cleaned up off the farm. A lot of guys have moved stuff aggressively to get it moved. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be tight going into the summertime.
New crop corn hit 567 and a half on the board today, which is, a lot better than it was just a couple of weeks ago. And some people think it's a rally in a broader downturn. You getting any sales on new crop?
Not really. No, I really think we have to get closer to the $6 mark for cash for us to see a lot of movement on new crop or closer to that area.
Turn your attention to soybeans. What would your thoughts be there today?
Soybeans, obviously we've lost a lot here in the last week to 10 days. The futures market took a really good hit on old crop beans. We gained a little bit back today, but, those are damaged in everybody's eyes and, going to take a while before we see selling again there.
I mean, we're nowhere near $15, are we?
We are not, no. we're south of $14.50 right now.
And I suppose $12 plus is not a very attractive price for new crop either at this point.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're having the same struggles on new crop beans that we see in new crop corn. It's just not enticing to anybody right now.
Have you begun to think about planting intentions report and or quarterly grain stock report and what we might see?
Well, it's definitely going to be interesting, that's for sure. I mean, I think a lot of people are looking to that report for the next direction in the market. Whether there's any surprises in there or not, it's hard to determine, especially since we really have seen a lot of delayed planting in a lot of different areas. And, obviously, here we set March 20th, and we've yet to turn a wheel in this area. And this time last year, we had some definite progress at this point in the year. So, it's definitely behind, and it'll be interesting to see if the report reflects that.
Why don't we have your prices then today, Scott?
$7.68 for corn, $14.41 for beans.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
That's Scott Butcher of the Andersons, and he is in Clymers, Indiana. I'll be back in a couple of minutes with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, with his take on weather. It's National Agriculture Day. The celebration always occurs on the first day of spring, and it's coordinated by the Agriculture Council of America, whose mission is to share with every American where food and fiber products are produced. National Ag Day also shows appreciation for national farmers and ranchers who are responsible for the supply of food, clothing, and other commodities nationwide and globally. The first National Ag Day was in 1973.
It's also National Ravioli Day and St. Cuthbert's Day, patron of shepherds. On this day in agricultural history in 1727, Sir Isaac Newton died. The story, of course, is that an apple falling on his head inspired his theory of universal gravitation. Few think Newton was really hit on the noggin, but rather that he likely came upon the idea of the power of gravity while sitting at the window of his mother's Lincolnshire estate. Newton is reported to have spied an apple falling from a tree while in a contemplative mood. Newton asked himself, why should the apple always descend perpendicular to the ground instead of going sideways or upwards? The apple, by the way, is thought to have been the green-skinned flower of Kent variety. And in 1932, Ilya Ivanovich Ivanov died. Ivanov was a Soviet biologist. While others had previously shown it was possible to artificially inseminate domestic animals, Ivanov developed the practical procedures in 1901. Initially working with horses, by the early 1930s, the procedure was being used on other farm animals as well. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, we are hoping that the weather pattern will turn drier and warmer, but I suspect you don't have that kind of news for us.
I really don't. You know, it's very interesting, the pattern that we're in right now. It's not just a North America phenomenon, and it is something that extends all the way up into Canada. By the way, everybody is colder than normal right now, and Canada's got a lot of snow on the ground, and yes, I think we're going to have a bunch of snow on the ground, too, before the weekend is over. But it's also impacting Europe and even northeastern China. So the whole northern hemisphere has got a lot of cold air in it, and it's going to take a while to get it to warm up. The odds of us coming into that first week of April, when we're ready to put in that first bout of corn seed, being warm enough to do so is pretty low. Our soil temperatures are just not going to be back above 50. And unfortunately, the look at the forecast as we move forward here isn't going to necessarily offer us a lot of incentive for planting, because it's not going to look real warm even when we get to the last days of March and early days of April. In other words, what I'm trying to say here is that, you know, we can plant. Sometimes we plant when the soil temperatures are not quite where they need to be because we know it's going to warm up. But the forecast right now is not really leaning in that direction. We will see warmer weather, but it's just not necessarily going to push us over that threshold right away. So a little bit of delay in April is probable. And in the meantime, while it is so blasted cold across a big part of the country, we're getting these storm systems to come across. Even though the storms are not huge events, they're not drying up very well because it's too cool and the evaporation rates are low. So both the wet and the cool bias are probably going to be with us on into that first week of April easily.
So what are you looking at that would tell you that we're going to break this pattern and come into something more seasonal?
Well, a couple of things are going to take place here. First of all, there's three influences on this cold air right now. It's the negative phase of the Arctic Oscillator, which is strongly negative right now. There's a Madden-Julian oscillation event, which is occurring in the Atlantic or the Pacific Ocean right now, that's also carrying support for the cold. And then the 18-year cycle is supporting a colder bias as well. Well, the 18-year cycle will be playing on for a week, for weeks yet to come. But the other two features will actually go away fairly soon, and we'll lose a lot of the intensity of the cold. But the 18-year cycle suggests we'll still be fighting a cooler bias periodically as we go deeply into April and early May. That doesn't mean we won't ever warm up, but we will have additional bouts of cooling take place during these periods of time. And so we will be constantly worried about our weak condition out there, because bouts of cold are going to come after it's warm for a while. And it does look like we'll be warm enough to get the corn crop going into the ground, but it will be a slow grower initially because of the ongoing cool bias.
Thank you, Drew.
Have a good day.
That's World Weather Incorporated meteorologist Drew Lerner. And that is today's Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.